Hey everybody, welcome to the Hunter's Quest podcast. It's your host, Hunter McWaters. It's great to be with you. Today I have a really cool episode. Actually, it's one of my favorite podcasts I've done in a really long time. And it's funny because the ones you don't really expect are the ones that are always fire. Like, I heard my guest today on another podcast he had done with another one of my guests. And I was like, you know what? Might be cool to talk to this guy. Let me just set it up real quick. And didn't think too much of it, and then got into it, and it was just an amazing, interesting conversation. So you'll hear it in my voice through the episode. I'm just like, we're both getting so excited and just like talking over each other and like trying to get out every word in, because this just felt like one of those people that I was like supposed to talk to. We connected on a lot of stuff, and you know, if you've been listening for a while, you know I can get a little get a little weird on some stuff, and you know, to me, it's not weird. It's like the truth and normal, but it might be weird to some people. But we just connected on all that stuff and had a really, really cool conversation. He is the host of the Wild Fed TV show on Outdoor Channel. Really into foraging and, you know, gardening and obviously hunting. Basically just trying to help people to eat cleaner and eat more natural and be healthier. And so we have a really great conversation, very enjoyable. I think you guys will like it. So if you get a minute, go over to my YouTube channel, please subscribe. I just released two really cool bear hunt films just in time for bear season. One of which, the most recent one, got restricted by YouTube because they're, you know, libs that don't like bear hunting, and for whatever reason this one got restricted, so the view count is super low. So really appreciate it if you went over there, watch the film, and share it, send it to friends and family, talk it up. Let's try to get that thing going, because yeah, the view count is trash because YouTube is restricting it. So anyway, and guys, as we talk about in that episode, bear hunting is conservation. Like, these states on the most part do a horrible job controlling their predators, and the predators just wreak havoc on fawns and elk calves. So we got to do our part there. I know you guys are gearing up for spring bear, so go to my YouTube channel, the Hunter's Quest YouTube channel, and you can search the Hunter's Quest or my name, Hunter McWaters. Watch those films, please share them, comment on them, and there's a cool giveaway going on there with Eberly Stock if you comment on the film. Which reminds me, Eberly Stock also is having an awesome sale right now, like up to 50% off on a lot of their stuff. Right now, all season I ran the Vapor Pack series. You know, it's everything's modular, so you have your main frame, and then I have the 2500 vapor pack and the 5000, depending on, you know, if I'm doing a multi-day or just a day hunt. And you can throw the lid on there, you can throw bat wings on there, and rifle scabbard, whatever you want to really load it out to what your needs are. So that's what I love about Eberly Stock. It's all modular, but also super easy to use. Also, their bino pack, the Recon modular bino pack, my favorite bino pack I've ever used. I started using that one before I even was even partnered with Eberly Stock at all, because it's just the best one I've used. And tons of other great stuff over there, guys, including travel bags, duffel bags, and everyday carry backpacks. I use those as my carry-ons. I use the Atlas Duffel, I think it's called, as the roller bag that I use in all my hunts. So I'm using Eberly Stock stuff from my EDC or like carry-on bag backpacks all the way to my big, you know, roller bags to take all my gear on these out-of-state hunts, to my backcountry backpack, to my bino harness and everything in between. They're a great company to work with. So go to eberlystock.com/huntersquest. And that's my, like, Q curated list that's my own like page that if you go there, you can see all my favorite pieces that I've put on there and kind of curated for you guys. It's all the stuff you'll be seeing in all the films and stuff. So go to eberlystock.com/Hunter's Quest, and that will also be in the description of this show. And they're having, like I said, a huge sale right now, so now's a great time. One more thing I got to mention up front. This is the best time of year to gear up on new stuff. Test it out during spring bear season or just on hikes or whatever, and then, you know, be ready to go when it's fall. A lot of stuff's coming on sale, but I cannot speak highly enough about Canis Athlete gear. I've been rocking nothing but Canis all this previous season, and I'm telling you guys, I'm a stickler for good technical clothing, and I would not wear this stuff if it wasn't legit, and it is legit. Every piece is awesome, and it's not just me saying that. They're not paying me extra to say this. This stuff is great. Every piece I've gotten performs excellently from the desert all the way up to, you know, the rainforest and Alaska and Oregon. So every friend I've had that's tried it has really liked it. Great company. Based in the Midwest, actually, but amazing technical mountain hunting apparel, and I'll never go anywhere else. You know, it's great stuff. So check out canisathlete.com. Use my code Quest, and you will save. You know, it's not the cheapest stuff on the market, but that's because it's designed amazingly, amazing materials, and will last you a long time. Specifically, really like their pants a lot. Their Pamir insulated jacket, Alpha Grizzly insulation, the Kafui pants, and the Alpine pants are the best pants I've ever tried. So anyway, lots of great stuff over there. Everything from socks to everything. Go over there, use the code Quest, save, and support a great company making great stuff. Anyway, enough of that stuff, guys. Enjoy this episode with Daniel Vitalis of the Wild Fed TV show. See you guys on the next one. All right, everybody, welcome to the Hunter's Quest podcast. This is your host, Hunter McWaters, and today I'm here with Mr. Daniel Vitalis of the Wild Fed TV show on Outdoor Channel. How you doing, man?
I'm doing great. Thanks for having me on.
Yeah, man. So we chatted a little bit off air, but I didn't even ask, like, where do you live?
I'm in the great state of Maine.
Okay, Maine. Nice.
Yeah. I call it Alaska light. I always joke around, you know. It's obviously really not, especially in the southern part of the state, but we are like, I always liken it to you walk into a restaurant and you want that seat that gives you the view of the door and the whole space. It's like, mm-hmm. You get up into that back corner of Maine, there's nothing but Quebec woods, you know, north of you, and you're just kind of looking out at the whole country, like in a very nice stable position.
No, that's cool, man. So I'm also on the East Coast. I'm in Virginia.
Oh, no way.
Yeah, but I've always...
Looking at that wall, I had you for being out west somewhere.
That's where I spend all my time, man. Yeah. I go out west about 6 or 7 times a year.
Okay.
Yeah, we can get into it if you want. But, I mean, I've always been a hunter, but when I found, like, spot and stalk, western, mountain hunting, I just became mm-hmm. obsessed. And that's why I'm sitting here talking to you right now. Mm-hmm. So yeah, man, I've never been to Maine though, and I've always really wanted to. It seems like a really awesome place. Are you from there?
I'm from New Hampshire, just over the border. So when you live in Maine, if you go up to a Mainer, they talk like this, and you go up to a Mainer and they go, "Where are you from?" It's a nightmare because you want to say Maine. If you weren't born here, you'll never be a Mainer. If you're from New Hampshire, you kind of get a pass. If you're from Massachusetts, Connecticut, or New York, you get the dirty eye. So, okay. You know, the Mainers are real particular about that.
Are they a pretty conservative bunch, or are they in there with the New Englanders? Or
I would say, okay, you got two Mains. You got Southern Maine and then the rest of the state.
Yeah.
That's where all the hunting is. You know, most people from outside of here know about the Northwoods. You know, that's all that paper land up north, mm-hmm. That's open to hunting. The southern part of the state It's a mix. And but once you get into Portland, Maine, which is a really cool city, awesome food scene, but it looks like a lot of cities in the US. It looks like the Joker's henchmen are running it, you know, a lot of clowns running around with purple hair screaming at you. So you have that there, but the state's pretty conservative, I'd say overall.
So sorry, I'm just taking some notes here. That's interesting. And that seems like that's a lot of the country. I mean, Oregon is very similar. You know, everyone, like, even when I say it, when you think of Oregon, you think, you know, crazy, you know, just the city folk. But like most of Oregon, as and we could probably say most of America, if you look at the last election
Texas is
results.
this way, right? Texas is this way. You go into Austin, it's a quite a progressive city, and then the rest of the state, as you surely know, is extremely conservative. And so I think what we're looking at is that people in the urban environment, so removed from the natural world, have started to, I mean, we're in a really unique situation in the last couple hundred years with the Industrial Revolution and people losing touch with the food base and the land base. But now, especially with social media, internet, and progressively even more going towards this metaverse, virtual, augmented reality kind of world, people in the cities are many of them are losing touch with reality, and it's so obvious.
And yeah, there's so many things to draw out of that. I mean, and that's what's unfortunate too. I mean, because with the ballot box biology, you're seeing those people completely removed from the natural world and how things are supposed to operate, making decisions about wildlife stuff that they have no business weighing in on.
Yeah, I see that bear claw around your neck, and it makes me think of things that have been said to me about bear hunting over the years, you know, where I've had progressives say things to me like, "You killed that bear? That bear had a family he was trying to take care of." It's like, you mean eat his cubs? Like,
Yeah,
I'm
he probably
sorry,
ate the
but
cubs and then raped the mom.
you're very dissociated from how it all works. And that's not to, I'm not one of those people who's like, it's so brutal in nature, nature's red and tooth and claw. I actually don't really see the world like that, but I think that people have gotten really far away from it, and they all have. It seems like the further people get away from nature, the more opinions they have about it, actually.
Yeah, for sure.
There's a humbleness to people who spend a lot of time in nature, right? It humbles you. You realize, here's what I think. I mean, biggest picture, because next to that bear claw, I see a cross there. So biggest picture for me is that when you spend time in nature, it's really obvious people didn't make this stuff. You're like surrounded by something so much bigger than you, and intelligence and design so much greater than you. When you're in the city, I call it artifact land, everything around you is built by human hands, or even if there's a natural thing there, like a tree planted in a sidewalk, it's not a natural wild tree that was just there. It's a horticultural domesticated variety that humans tinkered with in the breeding process and created. And so everything in the city is shaped by human will and shaped by human hands. That's actually the meaning of artifact. So artifact comes from the word art, and art is, you know, human expression. And so and the impact of human will on a thing. So I always say, like, if you and me were walking out in Arizona and we found an arrowhead on the ground, and we also found a piece of flint, if we looked at them molecularly, they're the same thing. But one's natural, the stone, and one's an artifact because it's been shaped by human hands, even though they both started out as natural stone. And so everything in the city is an artifact. And when you're surrounded by artifacts, you start thinking that human beings are the greatest force in the world and in the universe, and that our intelligence is the greatest force in the universe. And when you spend time in nature, you just know that's not true.
Wow, so much good stuff there. Yeah, I never thought about that. I mean, about just the subconscious level of literally everything your eye touches is man-made and how that plays itself out in your worldview. And yeah, I'm the same way, man. Like, you know, I'm a person of faith and spent tons of time on the land. And like, to me, it's like, how can you, it seems like completely like, what's the word where you think you know everything? Not like vain, but anyway, it's like, how can you believe that, like, there's no God? I just don't understand how you can believe that. And I think more you spend time, you know, you do see that intelligent design, and that's crazy, man.
We also see pretty quickly. I mean, we know now that everything is all life forms are like a written code. It's a language in our DNA. And you're like, you're telling me that nothing exploded and became everything, and then in that explosion, it organized a language that created self-organizing, self-improving organisms. I mean, that's sort of like, because they're always like, oh, the second law of thermodynamics, it's entropy. Every complex system tends towards decay. You like accept life, which gets more and more complex all the time by itself through some kind of written code. You know, like, I mean, I'm sure you've heard that saying. It's like a tornado going through a junkyard and assembling a seven working 747. It's like that pales in comparison, actually. And so it's pretty clear that whatever we are, we're something pretty special. But it's not a random occurrence, and it certainly doesn't seem to come out of any kind of explosion I've ever seen.
My like non-Christian biology teacher told us that about the 747 and the and I was
Oh
just
yeah,
like,
right.
and I quote that a lot because it's crazy. But yeah, man, and like, oh man, there's so many roads to go down. Let's back up a little bit, and we'll get into some of this stuff more. But I do want to just kind of introduce you a little bit. I want to learn a little bit about your background. Just kind of introduce yourself to folks and myself, because there are certain podcasts where and I intentionally don't really research my guests because I like to hear their story for the first time and have questions that are like organic. So, yeah, man, I'd love to hear just about how you like where you come from, your story, and how you kind of got to where you are, and like what made you into what you're doing.
Yeah, well, thanks a lot, and again, thanks for sharing your platform. And sorry, I tend to go a little deep, a little quick there.
No,
So,
I love it, dude.
so
Like,
let me back off. We'll get back down to the runway here. So I'm Daniel Vitalis. I host Wild Fed on Outdoor Channel. We're just going into our sixth season, which is
nice.
just amazing to me. It's never really imagined that would happen. But when I was a young person, I grew up in a pretty unfortunate situation, you know, and pretty low strata of like socioeconomically, and was just surrounded by a lot of bad. Luckily there was some glimmers of light in there, but I mean it was mostly pretty bad. And by the time I was 16, I realized like I was gonna have to really take control of my life, or I mean I was gonna end up like everyone around me, because the kids I grew up with, you know, they died, they went to jail, they became drug addicts and alcoholics. And I sort of set off on a quest to like recover from that world. And it meant taking control of food. It meant getting into the gym. It meant educating myself, you know. And so those days, I'm 47 now. So I'm talking about 31 years ago. Do you remember like how old are you?
I just turned 38.
Okay. I don't know if you remember much before internet. I bet you do.
I
And
do, yeah.
yeah. Information was very expensive when I was a young person, you know, you in the sense that, not that you had to pay for it, but in the sense that if I wanted to know a fact, like
Yeah.
I got to go to the library, I
Hours
got to go
looking
to the
through
card
books.
catalog, yeah, pile of books, I'm
Yeah.
searching for that.
I
Think
remember
about
like
when
they taught us how to like write research papers, and it was like go to the books and then like make note cards and like put the citations and like all this crazy stuff to like write a
yeah,
research
so by the
paper.
time you learned the thing, like what's the altitude of this mountain? That was like emblazoned in your memory because you put so much work, it was so expensive. So it's like when you buy something very expensive, you're very careful with it, versus when somebody, I'm sure you've had it, like some company gives you some amazing piece of equipment for free and you know it's really expensive, but you don't value it. It was free, right? So today, by contrast, like information comes so easy, people can't even remember their own phone numbers anymore, right? Like, because the information's always right there. You can go get it easy, easy, easy. But for me, learning about health, learning how to take care of myself, it was a challenge back then. It was also before there was a health food movement in the United States. So when I was 16, I was like, got really interested in food, but there wasn't a Whole Foods yet. There wasn't even an organic certification yet. The food renaissance in the United States had not begun. Health food stores then were this like hippie leftover from the 70s thing. They smelled like patchouli. They had, you know,
Or Nag
oat
Champa.
flour covered dates and not, yeah, no, it had the nog in there all the time. Exactly. That smell, man. I'll tell you what, it's always a Tibetan prayer flag around when you smell that. So anyway, I kind of watched the whole health movement. I got to be part of that my whole life. But back then, you just got almost funneled into vegetarianism. So if you were in that world, There was no such thing as like a paleo movement yet or a carnivore diet. Everyone just seemed to believe, most people didn't do it, but they believed that vegetarian was healthy somehow. It was just associated. So I became a vegetarian and eventually a vegan. And then what I really got into was raw foods. I mean, because I had this sense, right? I would, like, for instance, in Genesis, right, where Adam and Eve are walking around in the garden, they're just eating raw fruits off the trees, right? There's no mention of them cooking anything. They're not eating meat yet. Like I was like wanted to kind of experience that. Like, what am I supposed to be like? This food in packages does not seem like this is what I'm supposed to be eating. So I find myself for over a decade doing a raw food vegan diet. I'll tell you what, that scene is insane. That scene is like sex, drugs, and rock and roll. You wouldn't think. You start getting in the higher levels, the conventions, the conferences, the retreats. It's wild, dude. It's like the 1960s again, right?
Okay.
So I'm in this crazy scene where people eat really healthy but do some wild stuff. And I start just seeing like, it starts not making sense after a while. And I'm hungry. After 10 years, I'm hungry, right?
Oh, wow. 10 years. That's a while.
10 years. Yeah. Yeah. I do this experiment sometimes. I've done a lot of public speaking. So picture this. I'll have a room. That could be 100 people, could be 1,000 people. And this is great, man. You may use this someday. I'll go, raise your hand if you know a vegan. And you just get like all the hands go up. Everybody knows a vegan. And then I'll go, only leave your hand up if you know somebody who's been a vegan for more than 5 years. It's like suddenly there's like five hands up. And then you go 10 years, 15 years, 20 years. You keep doing that, there's no hands left.
Yeah.
And I'll be like, okay, so you're saying no one here knows a lifelong vegan. And then that means nobody knows a lifelong vegan who met another lifelong vegan, had a child and raised them vegan. So we have no population studies to prove this is even possible. But these people tell us that we all need to switch to this and it's completely untested.
Yeah.
That's like saying you got to believe in Santa Claus or elves or something, right? It's like completely mythical. The lifelong vegan who has a vegan child is like a myth. So I start realizing that, and I read this book called Nutrition and Physical Degeneration by Weston Price. And he studied indigenous people and traditional cultures around the world in the late 1800s. He was a dentist.
Uh-huh.
And he traveled around the world.
Oh, I think you've heard some of this stuff.
He was in this era where that word quack was starting to get used. And the reason they were using it is quack is a reference to the word quicksilver, but in German is quacksilver. So everybody's known since the earliest days of metallurgy that mercury is toxic to people. So when dentists started putting mercury in teeth, they were called quacks because they were putting quacksilver in people. And there was this obvious thing like, wait, why would you put a toxic metal in someone's mouth? I mean, that's... Seems insane, right? So Weston Price starts saying to himself, well, why are we even getting cavities? How is this? This is a bone disease. If teeth are bones, how are we all getting these bone diseases? So he goes around the world. He starts studying indigenous and traditional cultures. And what he finds is they basically, the whole human fossil record is perfect teeth. Almost never any dental problems like crowding of teeth, crooked teeth, no. Very rare to find cavities in the dental record, even when the enamel's worn down, even in tribes where they file their teeth into points and cut right into the dentin, no cavity. Huh. And what he ends up determining is it has a lot to do with the fat-soluble vitamins that are in animal foods. And in the traditional foods these cultures would eat, fermented foods, the way they would prepare their grains, things like that. Well, that book just completely changed it all for me. And then I spent another year or two still in the vegan world, but preaching kind of meat to people.
Yeah.
And just converting like hundreds of people until they eventually I got kicked out of that scene and out on my own. And I got, you know, I kept following this idea. So it's like, well, what's natural for people to eat? And so I started really looking at indigenous diets, and that just got me really interested in the idea of wild food, because I started really deep diving into what domestication is and how, again, all the foods. See, here's the funny thing that people don't understand in our culture. We're so myopic. In other words, we need to zoom out sometimes. So if you were to get all of the, let's say we got the best representative for all the diets, the best vegan person, the best carnivore person, right? We get all the characters from all the diets together and they come and tell us what to eat and give us a meal plan. They're all basically taking the suite of foods in the supermarket. Americans eat about 35 foods a year. That's it. They're taking those 35 foods and they're just rearranging them into different groups. These are the good ones. These are the bad ones. It's all the same foods, and all those foods are domesticated. Domestication of foods is only, I mean, it's not very old.
Yeah.
Right? The anthropologists say that it's about 10 to 14,000 years. That's it.
Yeah.
So if you
And
believe
that's on
that
a
model,
very different scale than what we have today.
yeah. So they say human beings are 300,000 years old. Hominids, and which are the other human species, they track back 2.5 million, 3.5 million years. Well, if we only started domesticating foods, which is called the Neolithic Revolution, that's the agricultural revolution. This is important to remember too. If that started, let's say just we'll throw a dart at it and call it 10,000 years ago. If that started 10,000 years ago, it's not like a revolution where the whole world just got on board. The whole world fought it. Who am I talking about? I'm talking about the indigenous people everywhere in the world that fought
Yes.
colonists everywhere saying, we don't want this life way. And it was essentially through either just pressure, time,
Dude, have you read the book
matriculation.
Ishmael?
Of course. That
Like,
was a big major influence on me when I was
yeah.
younger. Interviewed that author when he was quite old, actually, in his
Okay.
80s.
Yeah, awesome book. And that I think that's what you're speaking of, which is like this like war, basically, for lack of a better word, between like agriculturalists and like hunter gatherers, which is, agriculture is like the beginning of basically modern civilization taking over. And it even he traces it back to Cain and Abel, which is super interesting about how one Cain brought the sacrifice before God, or I always mix up the two, that was unacceptable because it was like grain that he grew,
Plants.
right? And
Plants.
the one that brought like the meat that he killed. And then there's the jealousy, and they killed each other, and
And remember, the punishment that Adam and Eve receive is that now they have to work the soil,
yeah.
but it's going to bring forth thorns and thistles. When you're a hunter-gatherer, when I go foraging, thorns and thistles are not a problem for me because I'm not planting things and having something else grow up weedy in the place of it, where I'm like, oh, these thorns keep growing up and I'm trying to grow lettuce. It's a reference to agriculture. Then it says, by the sweat of thy brow will you eat your bread all the days of your life. So, okay, they're growing wheat. So now they're farming. So the punishment is you have to farm now, and it's going to be hard, and it's going to suck, and it's going to create toil, right? So that's embedded in that creation myth. And then we see this stuff kind of, well, here's what I want to say. The agricultural revolution is not over yet. Like, there's places in Africa, Indonesia, South America, where there are still hunter-gatherers. In other words, people who still have not gotten on board yet with agriculture. So this thing started 10,000 years ago, but the wave hasn't fully crashed yet. We're almost there. Like, maybe in your lifetime, the last hunter-gatherer will blink out of existence on planet Earth.
Wow.
That's a big deal in a way, right? Like the
Yeah.
traditional life way of humans. And so I got really interested in this idea of wild foods, and I started to ask myself, with the foods that I liked, well, like, what is this thing, right? So it's like, let's say that you love beef. You're a guy who loves to go out to get steaks. You don't hunt. You don't know about venison, but you like steak. And you're like, well, what's a cow? Because I've never seen a wild cow running around when I've been out in the woods.
Right.
The cow comes from the aurochs, and the aurochs went extinct in 1627. So we killed the last aurochs. Its skull is in Poland now in a museum in 1627. That means that the domesticated subspecies of cow is all that's left. Like, if the vegans had their way, we'd get rid of cows. It's like, well, what would happen? They'd just be extinct then? Like, that doesn't sound good. But you can't just set them loose either, because they're going to get eaten by cats and
Yeah.
dogs, like they won't survive in the wild. So, or similarly, if you grow a garden and one of the plants that I'll harvest in the summertime is wild lettuce. You look at a wild lettuce and you would just not realize that that's lettuce. And the thing about it is that lettuce doesn't need me to fluff its soil. A wild lettuce doesn't need me to water it. It doesn't need a fence. It doesn't need
Right.
pesticides, herbicides, weeding. It just grows.
Yeah.
Nobody has a problem planting lettuce in their garden and, oh shoot, the lettuce got out and it escaped and took over my lawn. You plant
Right.
one dandelion in your lawn, your
Yeah.
lawn's getting covered in dandelions, because dandelions are wild and
Wild
they still have
native.
that strength to do that.
Right. Which you can make salad out of dandelions too.
And you got to get it at the right time. But a lettuce, so that's what's so cool. It's like with a lettuce, right? What happened is, so a wild lettuce produces a really heavy latex. It's very bitter, but it was used throughout time as an opium substitute. Like, it's got medicinal qualities. People used to make tinctures of it to help their kids sleep at night or be used when you had a cough. Well, that medicine is bitter. when we taste bitter, we go, oh, gross. And so what we did was we domesticated plants to breed the bitterness out. When we did that, it left the food with no medicine anymore because we bred it out.
Yeah.
Okay. So now we have to take all kinds of medicine because we bred all the medicine out of our food because we're eating all this medicine deficient food, right?
Yeah.
And another layer of that is what we call medicine is equivalent to poison. So poison and medicine are the same thing. They're just
The
dose dependent,
dose.
right? Dose, right? Dose is everything. So the poisons that we call medicines that in small amounts have positive physiological effects on us are also the thing that keep other animals from eating the plant in excess. So a lettuce doesn't mind if some aphids get on there and eat a little, but they can only eat so much because it's so
Yeah.
bitter and toxic, right? So when you breed that out, now the plants are super susceptible to anything eating them. So
Yep.
that's why the deer come and the birds come
And then
and
we
the
gotta dump
slugs
them with
come.
chemicals to keep them
Right.
so we
And
can.
then we get the food lacks medicine, so now we're medicine deficient. It puts us, you know, it says in the book of Revelation at the fall of Babylon, it says, it's talking about Babylon. It says, through your sorcery were all the nations deceived. But the Greek is actually through your pharmakeia. Through your pharmakeia were all the nations deceived. And so what's happened now is pharmaceutical companies have a stranglehold on us because we don't have enough medicine in our food. And back to the supermarket analogy with all of our influencer friends, they're telling you, oh, eat these, don't eat these, eat these, don't eat these. It's like, hey guys, this is all the same man-made food with no medicine that you're just shuffling into different piles over and over again, calling them different diets. The fad changes every 6 months to 2 years. And they're just like it not just changes, but pendulums. Like that you could go from veganism to carnivore in a year is like that's pretty extreme, right? Like
Yeah.
it's got to be. So we just keep, you know, when I was a kid, I grew up, the first thing I remember growing up in was fat-free. Fat was the villain.
Yeah, I remember that.
Then I remember fat
Red
stopped
meat.
being the villain. Yeah, all that. Then it went from fat's the villain to protein was a villain for a little while.
Right.
Too much protein would damage your kidneys, it gives you cancer. Then it shifted to carbs. Right now, carbs are the current villain. So everybody's trying. I go to a CrossFit gym, dude. Everybody's in there trying to eat
Same.
carb-free. I'm like, bro, this is a carby thing you're doing. Just to put it out there,
Yeah.
this is glycolytic. Like, you're fasting, you're not eating any carbs, and then you want to do Fran in 2 minutes. Like, you need some amount of carb, but carbs are the current bad guy,
Yeah.
and it just keeps switching, right? So we just keep
Well, I
cycling
feel like
through
part of
who's
that too
bad.
is like in America right now, health, air quotes, health is just not being fat because everyone's fat. So it's like that's why people like cut out the carbs because. Yeah, like there, like you said, like it's such a myopic view, but like to us now, it's like the only thing that is health is just like get that number on the scale down.
And it's funny because like it's really what it is that the human body is driven to seek calories because all of that time that human beings lived without agriculture, we lived in essentially a food deficit. Or not, I wouldn't say deficit, like perfect equilibrium,
Like right
just
there.
enough food, right? Just enough food for everybody. But hunter-gatherers don't have food surplus. So once you had, and you know this from like Ishmael and stuff, once you have agriculture, you start producing food surpluses. And then those surpluses lead to, not initially to fat people, actually, initially leads to different classes of people.
Yeah.
So pretty soon you need somebody who's the class who counts the grain and doles out the grain. And then you need a military and police class to protect the grain from the other tribes. And then you need some kind of priest class. And then you need a king of some kind, right? And it creates the
And then you're
stratified
preserving
world
it,
we're living.
making alcohol and creating alcoholics
Thank
and
you. Alcohol
rats.
basically, alcohol consumption doesn't start at agriculture, but chronic
Right.
alcohol consumption certainly does. So I'm going this year to the desert southwest for the harvest of the saguaro cactus fruit, for instance.
Oh, cool.
Now, out there, when the Tohono O'odham would harvest that every year, they'd have like a week-long kind of
Wait, is
drunken
it with the
festival.
Owatum people? Salt River
The
Pima?
I'm sure th them as well. Everybody in that area around
Okay.
Tucson, Phoenix, everywhere
Yeah,
there, they
'cause
would.
I'm working on a episode right now with my buddy Tosh Collins, who's
Oh yeah.
Owatum.
Sure.
Yeah, we did an
Man,
antelope
he's a
hunter hunt.
beast, huh?
Yeah, we did an antelope hunt together last year, and the whole point was just trying to like, find common ground and learn from each other's cultures and stuff.
Yeah.
So anyway, really cool.
What
But yeah.
a machine that guy is. But anyway, so every time I watch his videos, I'm like, I'm a loser. Out there, the tradition was to harvest the saguaro fruit. But of course, fruit sugar ferments very easily. They put it in containers, let it ferment, get drunk for a few days. That genetically a very low tolerance to alcohol in those in that phenotype. And then after a week, there's no more fruit, it's gone. But as soon as you have wheat, you're living off of the Bible again in Genesis calls it the herb of the field. When you're living off that, you've got constant access to beer making ingredients. So civilization itself, when I say civilization, I don't mean culture. I don't mean societies. I mean civilizations are farming city states. Civilization is an alcoholic. It's just always been that way. And by the way, when we talk about macros, it's funny because we'll talk about fat, protein, and carbohydrate, and everybody thinks those are the macros, right? But there's a fourth macro, and that's alcohol. And it's a significant one because carbohydrates have 4 calories per gram. Protein has 4 calories per gram, and fat, of course, has 9 calories per gram, which is really high. And why fat got demonized? Because you don't need much of it to get a lot of calories. But alcohol is 7 calories per gram, so much higher, almost double what a carb or a, you know, it's significant. And people never talk about it. I've been to so many nutrition lectures, and no one ever talks about that. And I'm always like, can somebody just bring it up? Because most people's alcohol consumption is significant enough that we should count that as a macro. But anyway, side note. So anyway, all these ingredients, I started chasing them back to their source. It's like, okay, I eat lettuce. What's a wild lettuce? All right, I'm eating blueberries. What's a wild blueberry? I'm eating red meat. Like, what are some wild red meats? What are some wild fishes? And that process, what I didn't expect to happen, but did, was that I found myself meeting face to face, or I guess face to leaf, or however you want to say that, all of these organisms. And it was like organisms, it's like I'd eaten halibut my whole life. I'd never seen one. It was like when I first saw one, it was like, oh my God.
Giant
Wow.
flounder.
Yeah. And I had no idea what these things, and people just don't know. Living in Maine, I think I knew more than a lot of people just because we're a little more rural. But now, this is how I liken it. I think about it like we're starting to understand the importance of social connection. Like how bad
Oh,
it
yeah.
is to live in isolation. The worst punishment we do for people is actually isolation, right? Well, at a species level, humans have been isolating themselves more and more and more and more. We used to, like Thosh's people, generations ago, would have known every organism that, besides microorganisms, they would have known every macroorganism in their environment, every plant, every animal, every lichen. They'd have a name for it. They'd know how to use it. They were so connected to all of these organisms. Today, people are connected to cats, dogs, spider plants in their house or something, but humans essentially have isolated themselves from the world. And what that's allowed us to do is we can make decisions that are very bad for the, like, if you have a family, you got to make decisions that take your family into account, right? You can't just make selfish decisions all the time. But if you isolated yourself enough from your family, you might start making decisions that are just about you that hurt your family. Well, when you tap birch trees and you tap maple trees and you hunt turkeys and you harvest, apples and you do all these things, now when you the way you live, you start to take all of these organisms provide for you and you provide for them. It's a reciprocal relationship. So you start to make decisions that take the rest of the world into account. And I think of that personally as sort of living godly in a way. I really think that that was the intention. Like, and what's happened is we are making decisions that are not just bad for the whole world. They're bad for future generations. They're bad for us. They're bad for everyone because we're humans are so isolated. And there's obviously forces in this world that just push us further into that isolation every day. I mean, we call our phones cell phones, like a prison cell. It's amazing the language we use. And by the way, I don't know about yours, but on the back of mine is a picture with an apple with a bite taken out of it, which really reminds me of where we just kind of started this conversation,
The
which is
Garden of
all
Eden.
about going right back to the beginning. So, very fascinating where we've ended up.
It's so fascinating, man. And
But to
just
finish, to wrap a bow on that, so I basically got really interested in wild foods after about 5 years of really immersing myself. And because by that time, I own a supplement company called Sir Thrival, and I've owned it now for 16 years. And so I was far enough into that business. It was really kind of rolling nicely. And I had the time, the space, the money to really throw myself at hunting, fishing, foraging really full time. And 5 years into that, we started making the show Wild Fed and started off making it for the internet, but, pretty quickly got picked up by Outdoor Channel. And here we are right now premiering our fifth season.
That's awesome, man. Oh man, I feel like you and me could just talk for like days about stuff. There's so many ways I could go with this, but one thing I wanted to ask you about. So I always kind of thought, what if Adam and Eve pre-fall were some other type of bipedal primate, like subspecies or something, not actually humans, and then like after the fall, and they may not even have been like individual, like entities, and then after the fall, Adam and Eve then become like Homo sapiens, and then they're embarrassed to be naked. Mm-hmm. They're farming. They're They're not just walking around eating raw stuff. Like, what if the original Adam and Eve were like even before Neanderthals? Like,
I get you. Yeah, Australopithecus.
Like Lucy. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Sure. Yeah, I think about that too, actually, and Genesis 6, has that really interesting thing about, for me, I really believe, and for any Christians listening to this, I don't want to offend anybody, but I'm deep into the Book of Enoch, and the Book of Enoch is Enoch 1 is an expansion on Genesis 6.
Yeah.
And Genesis 6 is essentially about an incursion of these watchers who come to our planet, or might even be better to say come into our dimension.
Yep.
And not procreate. Only fiddle with our genetics, they start producing offspring between themselves and human women.
Yeah.
And the human men clearly go along with this.
Yeah.
It creates some kind of golden age.
Yeah. And it says they corrupted all flesh, meaning they probably were doing genetic experiments with animals and stuff too.
It says that they sinned against birds and beasts and fishes. So they're like, they're tinkering with the genome here. And what a lot of people, Bible reading people, never really get is that, and I think here's the thing I want to say about the Book of Enoch. Okay, first of all, Jesus is constantly saying things that are callbacks to Enoch.
Yeah, it gets quoted.
The term "son of man" is like, whoa, that's right out of Enoch. And then it's quoted, like you said, but it's quoted by Peter, who's like lead disciple, and it's quoted by Jude, who's Jesus's biological brother. So it's like, hey, that's pretty good endorsement for the book,
Yeah.
It at least tells you that they were very familiar with the content. But today, people aren't familiar with the content, so they don't know usually that the flood event is not about, people are so bad because they keep lying and cheating and stealing. It's like, it's to wipe out
the gene,
these genetic experiments and to try to preserve the genome. And then you even humans. See like, right.
Because
and
it, you see it Jesus again came in Daniel. To rescue humans, not hybrids.
Correct. Yeah.
Dude, I had Timothy Alberino on my podcast.
No, he's amazing. I love that guy.
It's like viral on YouTube. Mm-hmm. But anyway.
He says something so powerful at the end of his book, Birthright, that really has, I think I'm still processing it because I spent a lot of time in New Age circles. I'll say New Age broadly. There's a lot there that's really good. And there's some stuff there that's Luciferian and very deceptive. But the constant theme, and now this is becoming so mainstream, is this idea of human evolution. We need to evolve ourselves, spiritually evolve. We need to go to the next level. Humans need to go to the next level. He's like, Jesus Christ is that evolution of humanity. Mm-hmm. He is the evolution of us isn't like navel gazing meditation and we levitate and turn multi-spectral. It's like, it's being like Christ-like is the evolution of humanity. And that's the thing we're struggling the most with. But anyway, the flood is to wipe out those genetics. And it again talks about this in the Book of Daniel, where Daniel's giving Nebuchadnezzar a interpretation of his dream. And he dreams of that statue that has the golden head and the silver shoulder. Right? And it goes down and it's each part of the statue represents another age. And then it finally gets down to our age, which is iron mixed with miry clay. And it says that the two will try to mingle themselves. But that I wish I had it with me, because it essentially says that their seed, they'll try to mingle their seed. The clay and the iron will try to mingle seed, but it won't, and it'll reject. And it's really interesting because here we are now where I don't know what iron means or clay means, but I would guess, like, if I had to pick what AI is and machines are, I'd be like, well, they're kind of iron. And then what are we? Well, we're like clearly clay. That's what it says right back in Genesis, call back to Genesis. So here we are at this time, we're trying to like mingle the
Transhumanism.
seed. Yeah, man. Transhumanism is, I think, the real. Okay, so let me try to circle this back around. I have a t-shirt we made at Wild Fed. It says on the front, antidote to the metaverse. And I believe I grew up with this idea that hunting and fishing was like this antiquated redneck kind of, Elmer Fudd thing.
Right.
Now, how I see it is the antidote to the metaverse. It's like you take somebody out and you put them in that, and it's something can awaken in them that they realize, whoa, we're on the wrong track.
Yeah.
But the again, the Bible refers to a delusion that's coming that's so great that if it was allowed, even the elect would be fooled by it. So here we are heading into this delusion. It's really compelling. It looks real. It's brightly lit. It's shiny. Oh, it's exciting. And it actually is that road to destruction of our species. Like you look at how many people, my wife and I, we tried to have kids for the last 10 years, and we had miscarriages after miscarriages after miscarriages.
Sorry,
And
man.
we don't have kids. Yeah, thank you. But I say it to illustrate, I mean, we live a very healthy life here. But I have so many friends who have not been able to have kids. Now, we were lucky. We got pregnant a lot, but we got a lot of friends aren't even able to get pregnant. And, IVF is becoming, I don't think people realize how common.
Right.
What does that mean? We're losing our ability to reproduce. Like we're actually heading towards species destruction. And I think there's forces that want that just hate humans.
Oh, for sure.
And
The same forces that
right.
want to
And
keep us locked in cities, don't want us to hunt and make, tell us all those lies that are straight demonic lies, because they don't want human liberation and freedom. And that's why, like, some people might hear this podcast, be like, these dudes are crazy or whatever. But like that, and that, but
What's
that's why,
this have
like,
to do with hunting?
hunting is more than a hobby, man. That's why I do what I do, and why, like, a hunt changed my life. Yeah, it can be a hobby, and it is a hobby, but it can be so much more. And like you said, it can open us up to truth and freedom and connection with God and truth, which is God, that is just in the face of the lie from the enemy, which is trying to keep people enslaved and addicted to prescription medicine and alcohol and processed food and die and not be able to procreate. And that's the enemy, man.
That's 100% on board. And that's why hunting, strangely, and I feel this way about fishing, about foraging, strangely, these are like becoming acts of defiance against this force. And you wouldn't think it based on, or the culture doesn't expect that. So I do Wild Fed. I call it always a Trojan horse. I'm hoping to get people hooked from a food perspective because so many people are like me come to this later in life with an interest in food. But my hope is that by connecting to ecosystems, they start to see something that's been hidden from them, and they
Because there's this
realize
weird
that.
dichotomy of, like you were saying, the health food world, and that, but then, like, once you really get into it, as you did, coming from a former vegan, realizing that health is hunt, like hunt. So there's this lie that's been created of, like you said, hunters are redneck, pieces of garbage. They're just Nazi fascist or whatever, however far they want to take it. But the truth is that, like, real health, it's just this weird dichotomy of, like,
Can't have it without nature, right? Can't have real health without nature. I'm so excited to see. I remember when people like Cam Haines first started coming on the scene, and there was a lot of hate. People were like, and I'll also say, at least here in Maine, the typical stereotype of hunters is somebody who's pretty overweight. And so and pretty unhealthy. And I see that in the older generation of hunters a lot. Not all of them, of course, like I mean, these are stereotypes and there's always these exceptions, but I know a lot of guys who can't walk more than 100 yards from their truck, and but I mean, I'm here, I am talking to you, I'm looking at you like, okay, this guy gets after it, and there's this shift underway in hunting culture where I think hunters are going from where we perceive to be very unhealthy, emotionally retarded, like all these things.
Dude,
And
that
now we're
shift is I'm sorry to keep interrupting you, but that shift happened in my life. I was the redneck hunter guy. I was a alcoholic. I was addicted to drugs at one point. I was obese at one point. It was going on my first mountain hunt, a backcountry hunt in Alaska, that literally changed my life. I got fit. I got clean before that, but it was like part of the whole. And to take me to where I am now, man.
So that's it, man. So you just summed it up. So it's like, what I'm really hoping to and hope I can be a part of, because another thing I've thought a lot about, you know, you think about how ancient hunting is, right? And here you are, you know, making your show, doing your podcast. I don't know if you've ever thought about this, but it's like, sometimes I get like the, like a little bit of like goosebumps thinking that I would ever have any impact on hunting, because it's like, think about how many humans have lived and hunted, but how few of them were able to actually impact hunting culture. Like along the way, especially in the beginning. So along the way, you know, people are using the same arrowhead for 4,000 years, and then somebody has an innovation and that person affects hunting culture, right? And then it goes on again for 5,000 years, and then somebody else, and over time. But now we're in this moment where we have access to so many people through what we do that you actually get to impact the most human thing of all human things. Like that's pretty cool. So I step back and I go like, oh, what do I want to, if I can inject anything into this with my little, you know, meager little show, it's like, what do I want to put out into this? And it's like a big part of it is I want to subtly, because I've learned lecturing doesn't work, I want to subtly encourage hunters to become healthier, to start to view the ecosystem in a more holistic way, to maybe develop an interest in some plants, because I think that's really useful. You know, trying to like shift this. I mean, I can't personally do it alone. Of course, we're all just pitching in here, but it's like, I really like that idea of a healthy hunter. And I would love people to start thinking of hunters. Oh yeah, that's that group of really fit people who spend time in nature. Yes. And because, you know, the other thing to think about is when the Industrial Revolution happened, in all its sort of iterations, that's what led to weak, sick, fat humans, right? Because we just worked all the time. You just had to, if you wanted to wash your clothes, right? Think about the effort of washing clothes is more than most people's workout. Yeah. Food processing would have been the big one. Building things, cutting things, like all day is physical labor. And then we have these machines all of a sudden, and people just become flaccid and lazy. And now we have to run on a hamster wheel to stay healthy, right?
Right.
So what's going to happen now with AI? Because you're already seeing it. And like I said before, most of us can't even remember more than a couple of phone numbers. If we're lucky, it's like, what's my wife's phone number again? So
mental atrophy.
And when we were a kid, you remember, cognitive diminishment is what they're calling it at the elite level, right? So Henry Kissinger called it that. So cognitive diminishment's already underway. I've watched it in my own lifetime. It's like my ability to do math has diminished so much with the having a calculator in my pocket. My ability to, I feel really blessed because I get to write a lot, but I sure noticed a lot of people who don't spend much time writing are really relying on all these AI tools to write now.
Yeah.
And that's, so that's language diminishment. So people are very much in the theme of like the book 1984, where there's a constant diminishment of the language on purpose, where they're trying to reduce the word count. So instead of saying, instead of having all these other ways of saying something's good, something's great, it's excellent, it's wonderful, it's powerful, it's, instead of that, they just want good plus good and double plus good. The government wants to limit your ideas. And the big thing was, if you can't, if you don't have a word for freedom, then how would you ever come up with the concept? And so they want to limit the language. Wow. Well, just pay attention to how people use the word super now. Oh, that it was a super good hunt. Oh, we were super high up in there. It's like, we're losing adjectives. Our language is diminishing really rapidly. So we have just got the first AI tools. Like the Industrial Revolution, we're going to see happen to our minds what we've just seen happen to our bodies in the last 100 years.
Yep.
So it's going to take people who, and I always thought, well, at least when I go into nature, I'm unplugged. And then it's like our good friend Elon here is putting a satellite system everywhere. You won't even be able to get away from service, right? So I mean, this is going to get to where we are going to be so immersed in this stuff. I think hunters are going to represent one of the small populations of people who stay healthy and have a connection in nature. I don't think that's going to be very easy for most people who don't have some kind of, especially if their hobby is like a city-based kind of thing or urban playing court type of thing.
Yeah, man. Guys, if you know me, you know I'm kind of a knife nerd, and I will not go into the backcountry or carry on my EDC anything that is not legit. And I just recently linked up with Half Face Blades, and I am super stoked about it. They make some of the best production and custom blades in the world. Go to halffaceblades.com. They got a bunch of different options for hunting blades on the production side. And then every Saturday at noon Pacific time or 3 p.m. Eastern, they will drop a bunch of custom knives, some of the most beautiful and like well-made knives I've ever seen. And keep your eyes out because I'm working with Half Face Blades on doing a collaboration blade with the Hunter's Quest that you can get pretty soon. So keep your eye out for that. And in the meantime, go to halffaceblades.com. And there's a very good chance that will quickly become your favorite knife. Check them out on Instagram too at Half Face Blades. And you can see what I'm talking about. They are beautiful pieces of craftsmanship. Check them out. Guys, if you've been listening for any amount of time, you know that Onyx Hunt is one of the most important tools I use all year. I live on the East Coast, and almost everything I do is west of the Mississippi, so I do not get a chance to get boots on the ground to scout. So Onyx Hunt, the desktop version, is basically my best friend during the off season, and then honestly, I rely on it and trust it pretty much with my life and use it constantly in the backcountry to keep track of where I am, to help me find animals, you know, navigate public and private. So it's one of those tools that's completely invaluable. So if you've been living under a rock and you don't have Onyx yet, you definitely need to sign up. Whether you're a whitetail guy or you're hunting out west, it's going to make you a better hunter. So go to onyxhunt.com and use the code QUEST when you sign up, and you'll save a little on your membership. You may have heard me mention it before, but I'm really proud to announce that this year I started working with Browning Firearms and Ammunition. Browning is a classic American brand that's been innovating and making some of the best firearms in the world since 1818, and they're based right there in Morgan, Utah. This year I am shooting the X-Bolt Speed 2 carbon fiber in 300 Win Mag, and it's one of the best shooting rifles I've ever owned. Super smooth action on it, great trigger, and the stock is completely adjustable. You can adjust the length of pull, the comb height, and even adjust from a sporter style grip to a more vertical style grip. So it's a really versatile gun, fit a lot of different shooters, and it's a great shooting gun. Browning has a full lineup of X-Bolt rifles in different stock options, barrel lengths and materials, and calibers. So go over to Browning.com and look at the full lineup of X-Bolt Speed 2 rifles, and I promise you, you won't be disappointed. Yeah, I saw a buddy of mine picked up one of the Earthlink like mobile things, and I was like, no, like literally one of my favorite parts about going hunting is my phone doesn't work, and I recognize like my own like addiction to it, like because social media is a part of my job, so that's a way to justify. But like I totally recognize it's an addiction, and it's like not healthy for you mentally. I try to not look. Like open my phone until after I've spent time with God in the morning, like got my kids ready for school. I still sometimes do the roll over and check everything, but like I try not to. That's like the first sign of addiction is like, what's the first thing you do when you wake up and like before you go to bed? But like I love the fact that I go on these hunts and I message the guys like, dude, I'd never want to get one of those things because I just love the fact that you can't do it. Like, and it's hard the first couple of days. Even you're like, oh, you kind of like miss it, and then
but isn't it cool that moment where it stops and you settle in, don't care.
Yeah, it takes like 2 or 3 days on a backcountry hunt to like the first couple of days you're kind of like, ah, like in the what, and it's like shocking, and then like day 3 or 4 you kind of like, okay, you're like in there and you're cool with
it. You don't even want to look at it again. You're like grateful.
Yeah,
yeah. This the challenge here. It's like. Because we, like, I recently bought a light phone, and it's like it's an e-ink reader style screen with basic text and phone function. And I thought, I'm going to just try this for a little while. And dude, it's very hard. My job requires a lot of interaction with these devices. The problem is that's sort of like, imagine if you had a job I guess it might be like if you were an alcoholic, but you also were a sommelier and you had to go to wine tastings all the time. It would be very difficult.
That's why I
Like
feel so bad for people with food addiction, 'cause like you have to eat to live,
have
but
to
like,
eat. So here we are with this thing that's as addictive as tobacco or as addictive as heroin. It's very hard to self-regulate. And then it sure is tricky. It sure is tricky, man. Like the way that it knows you is better than you know you in some ways, these algorithms, right? So anyway, you get it. So
And then
I
we're giving
think
them to
that,
children.
man, and then you hear the people who build this stuff say they don't give it to their children. And so, I mentioned a minute ago, Henry Kissinger, because he talked about cognitive diminishment, and he said that with AI, it was going to create two classes of people, essentially one class that's the elite class that's highly educated, understands how these things work, knows how to interact with them. And then the sort of dumb cattle, cognitively diminishment masses who are going to essentially be sort of slaves to the system. So, and slaves, I would imagine, I would guess, to their own dopamine cycle. So, and we're heading into the era of robots. We're heading into the era of, again, very sophisticated AIs of quantum computing, and meanwhile, mingled with that, our government has been doing some very irresponsible carrot dangling with this UAP thing, just like dropping it out there and being like, oh, maybe it's aliens, maybe it's not, who knows? And they just make you just like sit around wondering, like, what are you trying to tell us here? So we're about to enter into the most confusing time. And what I tell people is my relationship with nature makes it hard to fool me. So for instance, I don't, I guess back 2016, 2017, I remember when it just started, people just started telling me stuff like, hey, just so you know, your podcast isn't really a safe space because it's so heteronormative. And I'd be like, I don't even know what that means. What do you mean? And then, that stuff started rolling in, right? And all of a sudden it was like, no, a man can be a woman and a woman can be a man and all these things where you're like, When you spend time in nature, you just know that's bullshit. It's like, yeah, no, I see deer and squirrels. Like, that's not true about organisms, right? But if you only are in the man-made artifact world, you start to be, these ideas start to seem plausible. So nature is our antidote to being misled. And I think that's going to be a really important part of the future too, is, and I think that sadly, they're going to try to make it harder and harder. Right, with the 15-minute city idea and the implementation of that, and eventually maybe permitting required to get outside of the sort of city limits and all these kind of things. I mean, I think we're going to have to be extremely vigilant, maybe like almost like how we are about the Second Amendment. Like we're going to have to be very vigilant about our right to be in nature.
And that's I've realized that's one of the reasons why I'm so called and drawn to it is 'cause it is real. It's one of the only things left in our modern existence that is real, like real experience, authentic. Like you said, if you live in an urban environment and you embrace that fully, you can go through years or your whole life probably, and everything is manufactured and authentic, and it's which is a lie, which is the enemy. And I'm not trying to say everything, civilization is bad, but maybe kinda.
Yeah, I know. I sometimes will play a game with people because I agree. I mean, I'm more moderate than I'm coming off of. This is obviously a chance to get this stuff out. I mean, in my normal day to day, I don't get to talk about this much, and so going on behind my eyelids, but people don't really get to, I don't get to say it all the time. But I live a pretty moderate lifestyle. But sometimes with my friends, I'll start to be like, "All right, man, pitch me. Like, convince me that civilization's got merit." And it's funny because I'll watch people dig for stuff. The big one people always like to do is art. They'll be like, well, because you think about hunting and gathering societies, everybody has to spend their day hunting and gathering and contributing food to the group. And there isn't time, there's time for art, but it moves very slow. Like I said, like a new arrowhead can take a long time to emerge, right? It's not like today where the new thing is released every 6 months, like iPhone or something. So people will be like, well, look at all the art and like look at all the stuff we've been able to create. And it's like, okay, for what? To what end? Like, how is that? Is it worth having like children working in a strip mine in Africa so that you can paint pictures all day? Like, how good is it really? Like, and then how come when we go do the things that we were meant for, it's so meaningful? Like, when I'm out catching fish to feed my family, I don't feel like I'm laboring. But when I'm having to do administrative work and my tax prep, I sure feel like I'm laboring in a way I don't want to, you know?
Yo, for sure.
So I go do the things when I'm processing a deer down. I'm not like, sure wish there was a machine that could just do this for me. I enjoy that, you know? So I think that there is, it's not just like, oh, we've been freed from all that awful labor. I think that's a bit of a scam. I think
For
that life
sure.
was harder. I'm not trying to be just rose-colored glasses. Life was hard. But a couple myths that we always hear is that, well, people didn't live as long. It's like, that's nonsense. One of the things is they'll always say, well, the average life expectancy was 35. And you're like, okay, let's talk about how average life expectancies work. Average means we take all the ages of death and we add them together and then
Yeah.
divide them by the number, right? So if you have a 50% child mortality rate, that
That's
means
gonna
people die at zero.
Yeah.
Where's that going to put you? Because the normal natural loss of children is 50% for humans, roughly. And that's
Yeah.
really hard for people to tolerate, but it's actually true. And the funny thing is, people will fight that so hard, and then they'll also tell you the world's overpopulated.
And
And
then
you're
they'll
like,
also
well,
like be like,
which is it?
abortion, yeah.
I've had 20 abortions. So,
Yeah.
yeah, it's very interesting that part. And then the second piece is when you dig up bones in archaeological sites, you can't date them past 55 years. So the oldest bones get marked down as 55 years old. So if you start averaging the skeletons in any kind of, you know, hunter-gatherer encampment, and you can only, you've got to cut off at 55. I'm not saying a lot of people didn't die young because injury was an issue, predation was an issue, infection was an issue. But I'll tell you some things that weren't an issue: heart attacks, strokes, cancer, diabetes. Like, it's not like it's better now.
Yeah,
It's
it's not.
just
It's
a,
just
it's a, it
different.
was just a different set of problems.
And the quality of life. Plus, I mean, dude, lots of indigenous cultures have really vibrant art, like
Very vibrant art, yeah.
music, you know, painting, everything.
I think the difference is that they're the big difference, sorry to interrupt you here, but it's
No, you're
like
good.
the big difference is that the art you find in those cultures isn't self-expression, it's cultural expression. And the art you find in our culture is individual ego expression. And we've moved into this era of the ego. So everybody wants to express themselves. Everybody's an individual. And it sounds good. This is the trick of the enemy. It sounds so good. Hunter-gatherers almost, the idea of being an individual is frowned upon. The idea of
Yeah.
expressing individuality, because you're so focused on the children, you're so focused on the tribe. The hunter who comes, there isn't this thing of you come back, the big hunter with the animal. In fact, a lot of times what they would do is make the person who had the kill couldn't carry the animal into the tribe. So he couldn't be proud.
Yeah.
And like there was all these ways of making sure. You contrast that against, let's say, hip hop lyrics, and you're like, wow,
Yeah, what a
talk about a
joke, man.
180.
What a
So this
joke.
thing of like, well, I want to express myself, and then you look at what people are expressing out there
Yeah.
sometimes, and it's so toxic, you know? So I think that art, you're right, it's very vibrant art, but everything always leads back to the tribe being healthier and stronger. And
Yeah.
here, what it seems to lead towards, you know, I sometimes will say like, everybody, you know, that idea of caveman TV, like everybody sitting around the fire. So sitting around the fire telling stories is the ancient thing, right? Most of the stories were tied to the stars. So people found constellations that they would then attribute, they would anthropomorphize this individual, this
Yeah.
Orion, for instance. There's a great example. Orion's doing this because behind him is the dog, and over here is the scorpion, and all these stories emerge about the stars. When you're out in a truly natural environment with, you know, dry air like the desert at night on a new moon, I mean, the awe-inspiring, you can almost fall to your knees sometimes looking at the sky, right? It's so humbling. And the stories were about the stars. So, and they had all these dramas of like
Yeah.
this god and that goddess and all this drama that would happen, right? Well, as we've gotten light polluted, what's happened? So everybody in the city can't see the stars. They still have stars with a drama. They're just the Hollywood stars now. So now it's all Hollywood stars instead of the real
Yep.
stars. And their dramas are their real life dramas. And
Yep.
everybody's obsessed with that in the way that they used to be obsessed with the sky, except being obsessed with the sky connected you to God, and being obsessed with the stars connects you to ego and shame and body dysmorphia and all this kind of crazy stuff.
Yep. The
But
human's
the other thing
designed to
is,
worship something, and if it's not God,
yeah,
you'll replace it. And I've
find
always
something.
wondered, like, what the physiological or like psychological impacts are of, you think about like original humans, like what, how many hours over their lifetime they spent looking at the night sky, and compare that to now, because everyone's inside at night. Like, no one, like, even myself, who I'm very thoughtful of this stuff and spend a lot of time outside, like, the amount of time I've spent looking at the night sky compared to someone like, I don't know, 2,000, 3,000 years ago is probably like a fraction of a fraction.
All there was to do, right?
Yeah.
And there was no light pollution, and it was awe-inspiring. Yeah, I agree. I'm the same way. I don't get as much of that time now. The other thing is, we used to stare. You know how it is today. You can just stare into fire all night long. You know,
Yep.
if I put you in a room and was like, hey, you got to just hang out here all night, it's like you're go stir crazy. But you put me in front of a fire and I'm entertained by the fire somehow still, right? Well, what did we replace that with? It was like we
TV.
brought the fire inside and we set all of the couches and chairs around the fire. Well, eventually we stopped doing the fire and we put the TV there. And everybody stared into that and it became the replacement for the fire. But then it became the personal computer and there are more TVs. And then everybody went from it was a family thing to now I have my individual thing and my individual shows. And now everybody's walking around with a little one in their hand. And instead of it being a group activity, everybody's in the room watching their own stuff. So again, it's that divide us into individuals. So it's like break down the tribe into families, break down family clans into nuclear families. Now it's break nuclear families down into individuals. And now there's this even crazier thing, end your line. Oh, t turn your girls into boys and boys into girls, and they'll never reproduce. End your line. And it's like
Jeez.
the fact that we can't
Insanity,
zoom out of
dude.
this for a second, and if it
Insanity.
wasn't that there was an apple with a bite on it on my phone, or if it wasn't that we're marching in the streets in the name of pride. It's so interesting. It's like, what was the fall of Lucifer? It's like,
Yeah.
what's the whole Bible
That's like
telling
one of
you?
the
It's
biggest sins in
pride,
the
right?
Bible. Yeah.
Right. So we're in the streets for pride, using the symbol that God gave people to say, I'll never flood the earth again. The rainbow, right? It's
Yep.
like, it's unbelievable. It's like you zoom out for a second and it's so obvious.
I
But
know.
when you're deep in it, man, as long as they can keep your brain constantly hooked on something entertaining, you don't see it. And we're just
So crazy, dude.
marching right off a cliff like lemurs.
That's so wild, man.
Lemmings?
Yeah. Did we're definitely have to get together again at some point, because I have to cut it relatively soon here, unfortunately. Yeah, this has been one of the most enjoyable podcasts I've done in a long time. So we got to do this again or something. But
I'd love
or
to.
maybe do a collab episode together or something sometime.
I would love that, man. I don't get to do much of that Western style hunting. I would love to work
Yeah,
with you sometime. I think it'd be
yeah.
cool
And then
to
you
come out
could
your
teach
way.
me a ton about like different wild edibles, maybe, or just there's all kinds of stuff we could do.
Definitely.
So let's definitely like brew on that and keep that in mind. But just like last question, just like tie a little bit of a bow on it here for folks, because this stuff does get really heavy. I've gone down all these rabbit trails pretty hard, and at the end of the day, you have to be aware of them. You have to do your best, like you said, to to not buy into it, but you have to find some moderation, just like anything else. You can go too far down these trails. And I've flirted with that line. And at the end of the day, you have to give it back to God, like, and follow his word. I mean, even stuff like blessing your food before you eat it. Like, you're gonna, in modern society, you're gonna eat some agriculture. Even if you're a hunter, you're gonna eat some agriculturally raised meat. You're gonna eat
Oh
something
all
processed.
the time, all the
So
time.
like, it changed my perspective on like, you have to literally pray over that food so it doesn't hurt you. Because it says in the Bible, like, one of the things it says in Mark at the end is like, you can eat de any deadly thing and it will not harm you, and so that's why, and faith is a very real thing. It's not just it's not just a fairy tale, it the help you get through your life, like, so anyway, All to say, I want to just wrap a bow on it a little bit, and then let's definitely stay in touch. But what are like two or three things, you know, someone's listening to this and like, wow, this is just heavy. This is depressing. Like my life is so messed up compared to what these guys are talking about or whatever. What are two or three things that somebody can implement in their life right now, this week, to just take a step in the right direction in a practical sense?
Yeah, I think what you're saying, the way I would phrase it is like chop wood, carry water, right? Like no matter how enlightened you are or what you know, at the end of the day, I got to go out and feed my fireplace. Yeah. You know, I got to like get water from the well.
Right.
So,
right.
I think about this idea of the four elements, earth, water, air, fire. And I think about them in two ways I'm going to say that I think can be really useful to people. One is that the human body doesn't just eat food. It actually needs to eat all four elements. And what I mean is, you need food, that's earth. You need quality water. Mm. You need quality air, and you need the fire of the sun. And if any one of those is missing, you're not going to be very healthy. So start with food. And I always say to people like, hey, if you, you know, if you go to a regular supermarket, start to look for the better produce. If you can get to a better supermarket that carries more organic, that's great. And then from there, maybe you try the farmer's market. It's like, I don't expect anybody to go out and live off wild foods. Almost nobody can. This is a very different world than it used to be. But it's working your way towards cutting as many middlemen out of the food as possible till you're as close to the source. I think that might be one way to think about it. Remember that your water quality is important because it's not just fluoride and chlorine. I went to Tora Municipal Plant and found out they add acids and alkalis to keep the pipes from building up too much. Phosphoric acid and sodium hydroxide. As well,
so pharmaceuticals that are in there.
Depending on where your water sourced from, it could have birth control in it, right? Or Ozempic or whatever. So, So natural, clean, unprocessed water. It's very important to get outside where the air is something like 95% less polluted and rich in electrical ions, and then exposing your skin to the sun is you know, in a healthy
dose. So go on a backcountry hunt, basically.
Yeah, well, that's what's so funny about it, right? And then I would say earth, air, fire, water, again, to think about it like this. This would be the other way that you have, like, you could almost imagine you have four bodies. You have earth, a physical body that you need to take care of. But you have water, an emotional body. And a lot of people could get better at this, right? I think especially in the hunting world where we can, you know, it's just emotional intelligence is as important as so physical intelligence might be your ability to move well, let's say, and exercise well. Emotional intelligence, just ask your wife. She'll tell you all about it. And then air has always been associated with the mind. So we need to feed the intellect. We need to learn. We need to constantly grow intellectually. And fire, I would say, is the spiritual body. And it's like that might be the one where people need to put the most energy. And so I think becoming the balance of those instead of becoming too far out on any one of those is a really smart way to live.
Absolutely. That's great, man. Yeah, really sorry. I got to kind of cut it short here. I have another thing I got to go to, but
no worries, man. I've really enjoyed this.
Yeah, let's do it again sometime. And when we jump off before you clear off, let me grab your number.
Definitely.
And we'll stay in touch. But where can folks find you if they want to check out the show or more what you got going?
Yeah, best place to find me is on Instagram at Daniel Vitalis, and WildFed's there too, wild.fed. And then we're on the Outdoor Channel, 7:30 p.m. Eastern, Monday nights. We open for Meat Eater.
Cool. All right, man. Thanks for your time, and talk to you soon.
Yeah.